It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, William and I just spent 10 minutes talking about some of the most depressing topics alive, but now we're here and we're going to do fun podcasty times. Because that's how we roll, and we love you guys, and we want you guys to be amused. So, hello, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Pod, the Great White North, the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is just here to make you happy. All the other podcasts, they don't care about you. Like
no, they do
you.
Not. Not like we do.
And I'm going to be honest, it's because we don't have a lot going on. So you guys are that important to us.
We're a little clingy.
Every listener, we need you guys. If we lose a listener, that's like 20% of our listener base.
Wow.
So
only 20%? I thought...
Other podcasts 30, don't care. Maybe. We care. And my name is Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 202.
202.
And we're not here. We're over at the neighbor's house.
We are. We're like 100 feet away, having tacos. And actually, I'm having Mexican food with some of those people tomorrow night.
Oh.
Except now it will be 6 days ago or whatever. No.
Yeah.
I'm a little, actually, it's funny. This is the neighbor, the lady neighbor, her birthday is tomorrow, which for you guys is 6 days ago, but for us, tomorrow. And the husband yesterday emails a bunch of us and is like, let's do a surprise party dinner. Mm. I'm like, 2 days? Really? Okay. But, you know, we don't have a lot going on. So we're like, yeah, we'll be there. So we're going to be at Carlos O'Kelly's and do that. And I can talk about this because by the time this airs, they don't listen anyway, but by the time this airs, it will have already happened. So she loved it. It was really cool. Mostly because we tied up her kids in the basement beforehand, so she didn't have to deal with them. Oh, my God. That reminds me of a story I have to tell you.
Okay, tell me the story.
Okay, but first we have to, for those of you just joining us on episode 202, you're a little late. But here's the deal. We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All people that are not terrible email this address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with short little emails, comments, questions, topics, that kind of thing. It is the lifeblood of our show because the hat all on its own magically transmogrifies these emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically inside the hat itself. We, its elephantine servants, draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do it for about an hour, that's the whole show. Anyway, let me tell you a story. So last Sunday, which will be 2 Sundays ago now,
okay.
As has come up before, we have a standing agreement. We have dinner with the neighbors on Sunday night. Basically every Sunday. Sometimes we can't. But when we can, we have dinner over there. Sometimes we make it. Sometimes they make it. Sometimes we order pizza. Sometimes every once in a while we go out. But, you know, there's the 4-year-old and the 6-year-old, so it's a little bit of a project to go out. But usually we're over there. And so we're over there, and dinner's being made and stuff like that. And the kids, I'm sitting at the dining table. Other people are cooking, I don't know, and started playing with the kids. And the kids crawl under the table. And the kids are a little obsessed with a particular knock-knock joke at the moment. And that knock-knock joke is one involving a banana.
Okay.
And then another banana.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually an orange.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with this joke?
I think so, yeah.
Yes. knock knock, who's there? Banana. Knock knock, who's there? Banana. And then eventually, orange. You glad I didn't say banana? Mm-hmm. So they're kind of into this right now. It doesn't help that we bought their father a shirt that is a graphical representation of this joke. It is a door with three bananas and an orange standing in front of it. But so they're under the table, and I'm just screwed up with it, and I start knocking on the table. And that immediately clues them in. They're like, who's there? And so we start doing that joke, and they start telling me the joke under the table. And I'm getting bored, because children are boring, because they find something that made them laugh, or made you laugh, and then they say it 12 times. And kids won't be sick of it, but I'm sick of it. So I'm like, I got to mix this up a little bit. A lot of my creativity and amusement to children is because I was bored with what we were doing, and so I mixed it up. And in this case, I start addressing, so they're like, because they keep doing like knock knock, and finally I'm like knock knock. I'm like, is that orange? Because if it is, I'm not opening the door. And they think that's hilarious. I'm like knock knock, and they're like banana. I'm like, banana, you can come in, but orange has been really annoying me, so I stay out there. And they do a variant where they're like knock knock, who's there? Or and they do orange a few times, and then they do banana and say banana, you glad I didn't say orange? Which, you know, whatever. But they're screwed around, and one of them's really big on it. Like, it's orange. I'm like, orange, you can't come in. I'm tired of this. He's like, it's orange, let me in. I'm like, no. I'm like, it's banana. I'm like, okay, you can come in. I'm just kidding, it's orange. I'm like, oh. And then I'm even tired of this game, which is good because dinner's ready. So they need to come out of there. But the four-year-old's still down there, and he's like, knock, knock. And so I'm like, who's there? And a little hand comes out, holding an actual orange. And it just cracked me. I almost fell out of my chair.
Where did he get an orange down?
Apparently he snuck over and grabbed it off of the counter. Apparently Trish saw him. She's like, what is he doing? And she finally put it together. I had no clue. And so he's like, knock, knock. I'm like, who's there? And then this little orange comes out. I'm like, that is the funniest thing you have done in your 4 years of life, right? That's funnier than the time you slurred at all of us how you weren't drunk. That was funny. So yeah, that was fun. All right. How will your week be, William?
Oh, it'll be just marvelous.
Will it?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Just marvelous. What about yours?
Good. Great. A lot of cool things are going to happen. I'm going to discover a new country. I'm going to gain the power of flight.
What, by yourself? Or you're going to learn how to fly?
No, me and a group of people will all gain the power of flight. Oh. But we can do it individually. It's not like we have to hold hands or some weird shit like that.
Okay.
Yeah, individually we'll all learn. It's a correspondence course, but real fast, because flying, you know. But then after that, I mean, that's the first couple days of the week.
Okay.
Discover new country.
Yeah.
Gain power of flight. In that order, it would have saved so much trouble if I could gain the power of flight.
Yeah, the flight first. Yeah,
exactly. But then after that, couple days, I'm just going to sort of chill.
Sure, after 2 days like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm tired. And then...
Your arms especially.
No, that's... I know that's a classic joke, but that's not actually how you fly.
Oh.
It's a different thing. It's like, don't talk about stuff you don't understand.
What? I'd never say anything at all. Oh, that's kind of the idea, I see. You don't really say anything. I get it.
Yet one has. And then, after all of that, Wow. I just have no way to finish this bit. I've got nothing. That hurts.
Oh,
I couldn't.
Well.
I'll start a lemonade stand. Like, I don't even...
Start a lemonade stand.
I got nothing.
Well, this is our second time through tonight because we're pre-recording for next week.
We have one episode in us per night, so you can always tell.
Mm-hmm. We should just go right to that. We only pulled one out of that.
There we go.
Last week.
We should do that. I'm just looking back. I say looking, and I'm moving my eyes, but it's in my brain, thinking back to anything that I should have talked about my week before that.
Oh, okay.
Because it was a very exciting week, but... Oh, there is something.
What's that?
Gaming.
Yeah, you didn't say anything about that last
time. And I had a session
Did you?
Had a session with my gamers. This actually works out well because we have to miss next Tuesday, so it all evens out anyway.
Okay.
Yes, we did. We're on a new story arc. And this is going to require a little background, so I'm going to try and help you out here. So, recently, not the most recent story, but a little bit before that, there was a story in which our heroes encountered essentially artificially intelligent, digitized beings. Beings that existed purely within the data of a large computer network. And they don't really know much about them or where they came from, but they discover them. And in fact, in the process of the adventure, they helped some of them download into some artificial bodies that they now have as a side effect of some other stuff. I'll skip bury the details. That's the important part. And they had particularly made friends with one of them. And when they were leaving, this friend of theirs named Sid, they named it, it's a long story, gave them a small data drive with some stuff on it and said, you should download this into your ship's computer. And they're like, why? What's going on? And one of them's like, is this one of you? And Sid's like, no, that'd be too big. But this could grow into one of us. This is like, you know, a smaller version. So sort of proto-AI thing. So of course, because one of our characters, Steve, is a really obsessed with machines and robots, mildly autistic engineer. He immediately was like, that's cool, and installed it on the ship. And nothing happened. I mean, it started, things were happening in the code, but the ship didn't come alive or anything like that. Meanwhile, Steve got some other ideas, and in his downtime, he built himself a robotic panther named Tabitha.
Why not?
As a defense thing. It's already come in handy, actually, but that's just, his character kind of, Steve has a thing about robot cats, too. It's kind of weird. It's part of his history. But anyway, while this was going on, the player decided, while building Tabitha, before then, there were some less effective prototype versions that were smaller. And so it's essentially little robot kittens.
Okay.
Built about 12 of them.
All right.
And just for fun, he took a random portion of that code that he got from Sid and downloaded it to each of them.
Each of them?
Yes. Just for funsies. And then of the 12, he kept one for himself, and he gave three to the other three players, the other three characters as gifts. And then the other eight are just wandering about.
Okay.
So this most recent session is the start of a new story arc, and they are traveling to another planetoid right now. And in the process, spontaneously, all of these things, for lack of a better term, woke up. And are now active and have personalities and are involved. So the ship is alive and talking, and all the little kittens are, and they all have weird little personalities. And it's been hilarious. And they've been way into it. And they've only just now figured out that Steve made eight others. And that, in fact, one of them has a bomb in it. Because that's something Steve does.
He puts bombs in things.
Yes, actually, part of his crime while he was put into cryogenic suspension is he always put, because he'd always, like, in sci-fi things and stuff, he always put a self-destruct thing in. One time, one went off and killed a bunch of people. Because he was just like, that's what you do when you build stuff. There's always a self-destruct.
Sure.
And so they're like, how many did you do? And he's like, there's probably about a dozen. And then one of them said, are any of them a bomb? And me and Steve's player at the same time both got really wide-eyed and were like, good question. And he's like, there's definitely one of them's going to be bomb. But yeah, so they have now, one of them has a little cat who switches a lot of voices around a lot. Kind of like the spaceship in Flight of the Navigator after it downloaded all that stuff and kept using different voices. Named Dodge, because she literally, when it woke up and she wanted to see what it can do, she pointed a gun at it and said, dodge. See what happened. So that's what she named it. There's another one named Turk, which is short for turquoise because it's blue. And then there's another one that only speaks cat, actual meows and stuff, who's hot pink one named Queen. And I think the last one is named Fritz. And they haven't named the ship yet. They're working on that. In fact, the ship was theoretically going to be named Queen, but then due to some confusion, it ended up being the cat. But I've discovered a serious problem with this. I have to keep track of 5 extra voices.
Sure.
To the degree that one of them's talking with Dodge, and then I had Queen say something by meowing, and they were confused, and they thought Dodge had suddenly switched to a cat. I'm like, no, 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 that's how you know the difference. That's why I gave them all different voices. But, yeah, so pretty much the whole last episode was them dealing with the sudden awakening of what I like to collectively refer to as the Chaos Kittens and the ship. So that was pretty fun. Yeah, I think that's all I got. So, yeah, we'll go ahead with that.
Okie dokie.
Knock, knock. Who's there? Question from the
from the producer.
From the producer. Ooh, addressed, then you know it's good.
Addressed to ladies.
Is that us?
Well, I don't know.
Hey, ladies.
All right, then.
We thought it was problematic because we're not that gentle, not because we're ladies.
That's fine. I don't like, mind.
One time lady, really. On
gentleman, lady,
Happy Jack's RPG podcast, they pointed out that any sentence, absolutely any sentence, if you add to the end of it, ladies, turns it creepy. No matter what you say. Like, that lampshade is white. Ladies. See? Now it's creepy.
No. It's just
I think it's creepy. Well, it's also that.
Okay. Ladies, that's us.
Ladies.
I don't know. When I say that, it feels like a promotion. I don't know.
Oh, you liberal white bastard, you.
You must fight each other to the death. We've heard this before.
Yeah, I feel like people are, at this point, it has stopped becoming a hypothetical, it's just a request.
What tactics do you anticipate your opponent will use?
Really long-winded hostage negotiation scripts. I'm pretty confident I'll win.
Why is that?
Because I'm pretty confident you won't fight. Which is hilarious, because... Aside from that one thing, you would absolutely win. But that one thing, I'm pretty sure tips it in my favor. I'm pretty sure you will just Amish the shit out of it. And I will just beat you about the head and face and nuts until you fall down. And then it's all over.
Well, the thing about it is...
Oh, he's about to get creepy and badass here, people. He's about to say something Bruce Willis probably said in a movie.
I mean, I can't run, because if you tried to chase me, I'd run. And it would just be you chasing me all the time until you stopped chasing me, and then we'd stand there for a while until you're ready to chase me again, and then I'd keep go running again.
Well, can I get a car?
Because I'm pretty sure I can outlast you running.
I can just get in the car.
And try to run me over?
Well, or at least catch up, yeah.
Mm.
Or throw shit at you out the window?
Don't think that would work.
Why not?
There's all kinds of places I can go where your car won't go.
God damn it.
I mean, if it has to be like a cage match or something.
Yeah,
no,
okay,
I can
we'll
still run. I can still run all over the place. I can do that all day.
Oh, just in a circle. We're like a super uninteresting Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote situation.
Because I'm not just going to stand there and let you beat me up. That's dumb.
Yeah, no. Like,
but I'm not going to hit you, no. So
well, okay.
I guess I'll just run around and see if you can catch me.
If we're I don't think
you could.
No. If we're in a cage, But if I still get stuff, I can throw shit at you. I can probably throw the length of the cage.
You'd still have to hit me by throwing.
I feel like I could eventually. I'm going to get a lucky shot because it's not like you're going to pick it up and throw it
back.
And
the one lucky shot's going to kill me.
No, I'm going to get a lucky shot every once in a while. I'm not saying it wouldn't take a week. I'm saying if it's Thunderdome, we're in there till it's done. Eventually, I'm going to graze you with the chainsaw, and then you're going to be a little slower, and then I'm going to get that big-ass hammer thing, and I won't be able to catch you with it, but eventually I'll throw it, and maybe it'll, you know... I feel like with armaments, eventually I'm going to wear you down. I'm not saying it won't take a really long time, but...
This doesn't address the question of tactics.
My main tactic is after the month and a half, when I finally succeeded, I'm going to turn to everybody and yell, "Are you not entertained?" And when they say no, I'm going to say, "That's what I figured! This was a terrible idea."
I can't even begin to... I mean, you know, of course, we all know that if you have a gun, you can shoot somebody in the head or the chest or something.
That is true.
Or
that's my tactic, is to have a gun.
Or if you have a sharp object, you can stab them or whatever. But, I mean, without knowing... I mean...
If we're just kung fu in this shit.
Yeah. If you know what your weapon is, your tactic kind of follows along with whatever the weapon is. But if you don't have any weapons, I wouldn't know the first thing about killing someone with my bare hands.
Battle of wits.
I couldn't even begin to imagine that.
At best, I think we're one of those nerdy slap fights. Like,
I don't know. I wouldn't know. Ugh. But like I said, you give me a weapon, I think everyone knows what tactics you use with a baseball bat.
Bazooka.
I mean, yeah. So that
tactical nuclear warhead.
It only becomes interesting when you have to figure out how to do it with your bare hands, which I have no idea.
Well, but then there's the terrain and stuff, and we've established ours has to be a relatively small cage. Yeah, my tactic is probably like ineffective belly flopping for just days on end. I think what it comes down to is we're in a death match here. Your tactic is run away, and my tactic is just give up like right off the bat.
So really, I don't have to run at all. I can just stand a safe distance. And you're not going to do anything as long as I'm a safe distance away.
Yeah, but you got to, because I'll be like, well, maybe if he's going to, so then I might take a couple steps.
Well, then I'd take a couple steps. Take him back. And you throw like, something and yeah, I would dodge it.
No, I probably won't do this, so you're probably fine. A couple steps. No, okay, we're good, yeah. I think we both have a joint tactic that is boredom. Eventually, they let us stop fighting.
No, eventually they'll kill us for not fighting.
Oh, it's still a success.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go. Because I would get bored. Like, I already get intensely bored with not killing you. Like,
I know.
Almost all the time.
I know that.
So,
I know that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we're not good for this. We're both essentially pacifist, and we're both particularly pacifist when it comes to ourselves.
Right.
We're both unlikely to really ever defend ourselves, at least with any sort of real force.
Difficult to, for me to imagine a situation where I would defend myself. I'd have to think of a situation where doing so is my best strategy to defending somebody else. Like,
that's what
I know. If something happens to me, something's going to happen to this person next. So
yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I, of course, wrestle with that one because I like.
Okay. How about this then?
Oh, okay.
All right. We have to fight to the death. And if we don't fight to the death, if I don't kill you, they'll kill you, but they'll like torture you horribly. Like, you've got two things that can happen. Either I can kill you quick, or they can kill you long and terrible.
But so whoever doesn't win gets killed long and terrible?
No. No, if
well, then that's real easy. I'm like, okay, thanks. Then your strategy is to like give me a hug, and then like, yeah. Because if they're not torturing you,
well, what I'm saying is,
if I don't kill you,
if you
but ki- they'll torture me,
no,
if you don't kill me, then I want you to kill me too. Like, that's well, not a real fight.
But what I'm saying is, you don't want me to get tortured.
Yeah.
And if you kill me quick, they'll kill you quick too, instead of torturing you. No, wait, does that work?
No. Here's what has to happen. Here's how it has to work.
Okay.
Somebody, okay, if nobody dies in the ring,
okay,
in the cage, we both get horribly tortured to slow death.
Okay.
No, it's even easier. Whoever survives the cage gets tortured to horribly slow death.
Okay. Whoever survives does.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then it still doesn't work, because then our fight to the death, we're going to try and plan it so that we can be like, one, two, three, all right, then, you know, like...
Now we're both dead.
Exactly.
That's right. That's
so
right.
That's not... Right. I will admit, that's probably the most interesting fight they're going to get out of it. But, and we're all like, okay, if we do it this way, like, can we have a whiteboard or something? Okay, now, if you stab here, yeah, but if that happens, I'm not going to have enough strength to stab you. I'm like, okay, we got to start over again. Yeah. It'd be like 125 hours, but weirdly more interesting, I feel like. Because there's at least dialogue, you know? It'll be like, it'll basically be this podcast, but longer, and we both die at the end.
Yeah.
It would, yeah.
That's terrible!
Says the producer of this podcast. No, but actually, I think we've just answered what we do for the last show. Yeah.
My dinner with Andre, and they're both dead at the end.
Exactly. Yes. No, I definitely think that's what our final episode has to be now.
Whenever that is.
The end,
it
clearly.
It would be the final one, right?
Yeah.
It's always the last place you look.
In your death. This was a terrible idea. Whose idea was it for us to fight to the death?
I was dissatisfied with the 8-year-old.
Yeah, remember? She asked the 8-year-olds
and
8-year-olds.
She's like, if you won't kill children or senior citizens, you got to kill each other.
So I tried to revise it, but...
Well, we were still fighting each other in that other example, too.
No. We were just fighting children or old people.
No, we were fighting each other, but we could choose as allies.
No.
Wasn't it?
No.
No. I thought we were fighting
either,
each other still.
No. It was an individual scenario in which you were either taking on
five
8-year-olds or five 80-year-old war veterans. Right. And I was going for the kids. I think.
Going for the kids.
Some 80. My dad's 80. If he actually had, like, wartime combat experience, he'd be scary. He's a little scary now, but mostly because he's old and confused. And tells the same stories. That's my big worry. If I had to fight against five 80-year-old war veterans, they'd tell me the same stories until I would beg for death.
Are we going to drown him?
I feel like that was a pilot for a TV show. All right, I'm going to draw a thing. And then I'm going to kill you. So start running. But only in the living room. Hat's getting a little light, and it took me a minute to even find a question, but I found one. Here it is.
Go away.
It's not anonymous, and it's not from the producer. It must be my frickin' birthday. Actually, technically, in the time frame, by the time they listen to this, my frickin' birthday was yesterday.
That's right.
So, it's from That's Craig. Right.
Oh, Craig, good.
Craig, how is it in Slough? What was the last movie you walked out of before it had finished? Interesting. I will tell you, I recently walked out of that NBC Peter Pan thing. But not like in disgust. I'm just like, I don't like Peter Pan's story to begin with. So I it was over the Christmas holiday, and I just went to a different room in the house. I wasn't like, I was looking for something else to do. It wasn't like a protest or anything.
I've never technically done that ever.
I've never done it in a theater.
Yeah.
I've done it other places.
I mean, when I was watching Transformers.
Yeah.
The first one. I was so disappointed in it. I did something that I don't recall ever doing before.
Got drunk.
Which was, no, you know how you're watching a film and somewhere in the middle of it, you feel like you need to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can always like just wait till the end. I don't have to like go so bad. And this time I was like, why should I wait?
You peed, you peed just to get out of there.
No, I left to go to the bathroom because this movie was boring me so much.
Well, no.
I thought, there's no reason for me not
that
to just get up and go to the
bathroom. Explains your reaction, because there's a little section of like 5 minutes in the middle that makes the whole thing so much better.
And I'd never done that before. Because
Optimus Prime just slaps the shit out of Shia LaBeouf.
A lot of people,
for 5 minutes.
Especially if they get something to drink and a popcorn, you know, they feel like they have to go to the bathroom halfway through.
I'll always
stay to the end. It's no big deal to me. But this time I thought, why should I wait? I'll just go to the bathroom
now.
So I left, went to the bathroom. But I came back, so I didn't technically walk out on it.
I am so old, I monitor my fluid intake for the few hours before I'm going to go see a movie.
Yeah, I think that happens to most people when they get old. I do that too.
Because I've had a couple. There was one movie I haven't had to leave in the middle in a long time, but I did have one that I had to pee so bad by the end that like it hurt and like walking was difficult. Like it was crazy. Because normally I drink a lot. I drink a lot of fluids all the time.
Oh, okay.
And so, I drink liters of fluid a day.
I'm pretty sure that's the first. Even when I was a kid, I wouldn't walk out of a theater to go to the bathroom. I see people do it all the time, and I always think, why are they doing that? But this was the one film I was watching, and I was so disappointed with it and so bored. I thought, I'm just going to do this. And it's the first time I'd ever done it, and I haven't done it since. But that wasn't technically walking out.
No, it's not the same.
I've never really walked out on Nathan.
I have. Let's see. On cable one time, I tried. I started watching Catwoman.
Oh.
And I was so bored, I actually changed the channel halfway through.
Now, if you're talking about that, like starting even like a Netflix movie or something, there's been plenty of times where we've said, nah, we're not going to watch this, and so we stopped.
It's not super common for me. But sometimes the one that sticks with me, and this is a real one where I was like, I am so bothered by this movie, I don't want to see the rest of this movie. And other people are going to continue watching it, but I refuse to be in the room for it, basically, was what I believe is a very good film called Bent. And the producer and I were watching it on Netflix, and she watched the rest of it. And it is Clive Owen playing he was sort of not a con man. He was more he was a guy who could get things in 1930s Berlin. He was a gay man who was sort of known for being able to get contraband items and stuff. And basically he gets taken by the Nazis and sent to a concentration camp. And there were a couple of really disturbing scenes. And when we hit the second one, I was like, this isn't worth it for me. And from what I was told, like, that scene went on for like maybe 30 more seconds, and there was really nothing like that for the rest of the film. But I'm like, I'm still okay with my choice there. And it was a good film. It was really well acted. And this is true for a lot of, anytime it's stuff that I get offended by or whatever, this is a very important thing to me as I get older. Anytime I am offended, it is me being personally offended, and it has to do with me, and it doesn't have to do with the creator or any other audience people.
Right, right.
So, like, there are TV shows I find too personally offensive to watch. In no way do I want those TV shows taken off the air,
right.
Or do I have issues with people who watch them,
right.
Or do I even say they're not necessarily good shows. Some shows that I find too offensive to watch, I know are good shows. I just don't want to see them. And the reason I always bring this up is because all of you motherfucking people out there who try and legislate morality need to figure this out. If it offends you, don't do it. If it offends you, don't consume it. Don't make everybody else do the same thing. If they're not hurting anybody, then leave them the fuck alone. Also, buy my cat.
Yeah, I can't. I know there have been things that we've said, no, we're not going to watch the rest of this. But I don't know if it was ever an issue of, oh, this is really offensive. It's probably something like,
this is really dumb and boring.
Well, yeah, or if we are offended by it, it's kind of a, it's not really offended. It's more like, oh, this is one of those kinds of movies, which we don't like, so we're not going to watch it. I mean, it's something that probably would offend us if we watched it, or even if it didn't offend us, it wouldn't entertain us, so we just stop.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's really the same thing either.
I think there are probably a few movies I wish I did that with. And there are movies where I watch, like, half of it, and then for some reason we have to stop, and I don't care about coming back.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's happened to me a couple times, too.
And even when other people do. In fact, we had that. And this is the thing. I don't want to speak poorly of this one. But we saw, over the Christmas holiday, we saw Tammy. Recent Melissa McCarthy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched about the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. Like, it had good people in it. And there were funny lines. And I laughed. In general, it's one of those movies that's about a bunch of people who ultimately I feel like are really pathetic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the humor comes from that. And I feel a little weird about that. And we had to stop it because it's definitely R-rated. And the kids came over. The niece and nephew came over. Mm-hmm. So we had to stop it. And then later that night, they were going to watch the rest of it. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't need to see. And again, not a bad movie or anything.
She was good in that movie with Sandra Bullock, where they were both
The Heat. Yeah, yeah. That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
That was surprisingly good. And she's really good in St. Vincent.
The one movie that I always think of when someone says, you know, what's the last movie you walked out of? A movie that after I saw it, I think of it as the type of movie I would walk out
of. If I was going to walk out of a movie, this would be the one.
I didn't, but I think of this movie every time someone asks this kind of question, is Sin City.
That's a good one.
I just thought to myself, there were so many times. I mean, again, it's just not, I don't know, it's really in my nature to say, let's just get out of here. Let's not watch this. Because I just, when I commit to watching something, it's kind of like what you're saying. It's a piece of art, right? And maybe it's going to offend me, but if it's going to offend me, then I'm going to stay till the end to see
if it's worth being offended.
Right. Is it making a point this way? Or, you know, is there some kind of conversation I can have? I got to give it a chance. But after I've given it a chance, and I think it's garbage to me personally, like you said, I don't want it to be censored or something. It's just my own opinion. Then I can say it without anyone saying, oh, but you didn't watch the whole thing. Because I think that's a valid criticism if you didn't watch the whole thing.
And that was my viewpoint when I was younger. And now my viewpoint is, I don't need to know if it was worth it. I don't need to know. If I'm like, it's not worth it to me to sit through this scene. That's okay. And I certainly then can't criticize the film to others. And that's okay. But I'm just not willing to put up with it anymore. And it's very much for me, because I've seen a lot of movies, and I've seen some amazing movies. And there are still movies that I'm like, even if this becomes one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen, I don't think it's worth sitting. Like, and also, I've seen enough of the movie, I'm pretty sure it's not going to become one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen.
And
you know,
I think I know what you mean, because I'm the same way. But I think usually what it means for me is I don't even try to watch the film in the first place. I mean, I usually know enough about a film.
Yeah,
ahead
but
of time.
Sometimes I get surprised.
I don't usually get surprised.
Well, and there's a lot of movies. But see, I watch a lot of lighter movies.
Yeah.
And if it's a lighter movie and then it sticks some shit in there that really messes with my head, I'm like, eh. But
see, I don't watch as many movies as you do.
That's true. I mean, a lot of movies.
You watch a ton of movies. And the reason I don't watch
and I read
a lot of
books
is because I don't want that to happen, basically. Yeah. So I'll pretty much watch something that's really safe, or that if I know it's going to have something disturbing in it, I somehow also know or suspect it's going to have the payoff. Are... So,
well, and it becomes, really, you know, trusting people and stuff. If somebody tells me this movie's really dark, it's got some shit in it, but trust me, it's worth it, and it's somebody that I know and I respect and I feel like we have similar opinions, then I'm more likely to go for it. But you mentioned Sin City, and the one that comes to my mind, and the weird thing is it didn't occur to me during Sin City to walk out. I think I was in too much shock, but it is not uncommon in movies for me to be like, this is really bugging me. I'm really close to walking out. That happens sometimes. And the one that sticks in my head for that in particular was Kick-Ass.
Really?
Kick-Ass was a terrible movie for a lot of reasons. But there's also, Kick-Ass is probably most famous for having Hit Girl. Chloe Moritz playing like a 10-year-old foul-mouthed superheroine, which was kind of cute in its way, but whatever. But there is a point, this is, I suppose, something of a little bit of a spoiler for Kick-Ass, so live with yourself. There's a point near the end where she's in a one-on-one fight with the villain, and the villain gets the upper hand in a big way and starts trouncing her. And I'm sitting here being like, I'm watching Mark Strong beat the shit out of a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Maybe if the movie had been better before then, but I'm like, we're near the end, and this movie has pretty much sucked.
Yeah.
And now I'm watching Mark Strong beat the shit out of a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah.
It's totally cool for me to walk out. And I didn't, but that was one of those times where I was like, I should. I really should. And I keep telling myself, I'm like, this needs to end in the next 30 seconds, or I'm leaving. And I have that with, there have been many movies where I'm like, this is, I can't, I don't want to sit through this. This needs to move along real quick or I'm leaving.
Well, there
at least I say that to me a lot, but again, I don't ever do it. So maybe I'm just full of shit when I say that to myself.
I can imagine situations where I'd walk out. I mean,
if there's a fire.
Well, I've noticed that,
if Pauly Shore was in another movie.
Here's a new thing that's started happening to me in the last few years.
Reboot of Brokeback Mountain with Carrot Top and Pauly Shore.
I'll be reading...
That would be amazing. I would not walk out of that. That would be an amazing movie. Somebody make that movie.
I'll be reading an article, and I can't finish it. That happens.
I get that.
That happens to me now. Where usually it's when there's a couple... circumstances where this happens, and it's almost always in relation to some kind of feminist.
Yep, you and I—that is—that is our hot button issue. You and I both, in a big way. Like, I mean, I get pissed off about other stuff too, but feminism is a big one.
And there's two situations where this happens. One is when a evolutionary psychologist, and I'm starting to get to the point where it doesn't even matter if it's about gender stuff. Evolutionary psychologists are always saying, why do human beings do this? Now, this bothers me in two ways. One, most of the time they're asking why human beings do this, they're not talking about something human beings do. They're talking about something Americans do.
And modern Americans.
Or modern Americans.
Western. Yes.
But even sometimes when they're talking about something human beings do, it's like... there's so many assumptions here that they're not addressing about behavior and why people behave a certain way.
Absolutely.
And even even if it's a behavior that I do think human beings have exhibited since humans started, you know, evolution, even in biology, a trait that persists does not persist only because it helped them survive. Sometimes a trait persists because it didn't particularly
hinder their survival.
Exactly. So there it is. And a lot of biologists are realizing this. I think some of the leading biologists in ornithology are saying, do you know why the males are more colorful and they have all these mating rituals and stuff? Well, just because it happened one time in history and it doesn't prevent them from surviving in particular, so they still have it. They're realizing that there's no particular survival benefit to this. It's just one of those things that happened and never got selected out.
The one that always cracks me up, and it doesn't happen real often, but every once in a while, somebody tries to come up with the survival trait for why men have nipples.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you idiot. Somewhere in the evolution, we got nipples, and then we got the separate sexes, and they just, they didn't get in the way.
Exactly. Like, why? Exactly. Well, see, part of this is the theory that, well, because what
is the, because nobody understands how evolution works ever. God damn it.
That's part of it. But it, another thing is, and these are so-called scientists, so-called evolutionary scientists. Part of it is the idea that, well, this thing had to help you survive, or it would become vestigial or whatever. It's like, no. It doesn't
just fall off.
It doesn't necessarily work that way. Well, but like altruism is their favorite one. Like,
yes.
Why are we altruistic? And first of all, there's a lot of sociological and psychological and anthropological reasons this happens. You don't have to find some survival benefit. But then when you do, they're just pulling this stuff out of the air.
Yeah.
They're not making any testable claims.
No.
And yet they're making it out like these are scientific theories. Or if it sounds compelling or fancy enough, then it must be true. And when they do this with gender, when it's clearly some cultural thing, that's when it really makes me mad. But another thing that'll make me stop reading an article is when... it's a guy who is defending his privilege.
Yeah.
And I read that for a while, and after a while I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to get to the end of this article because that's what this guy's doing. He's defending his privilege. I know that's what he's doing, and I don't want to read that.
I recently read a 10-year-old interview with David Sim, who is known for two reasons. One, for writing a really weird indie comic for 300 issues over like 30 years called Cerberus, and also for very loudly and vocally claiming that feminism is A, part of communism, and B, a completely terrible thing that has ruined humanity. And it was kind of a hilarious interview, but I hadn't known anything about him or any of this before, and so I was like, I feel like I should look up some of this stuff, because he's always about how he's very reasonable and people try and argue with him and they always come from an emotional standpoint and they ignore the facts when they don't agree with them. And I was like, I should. And then I'm like, what possible outcome?
Yeah.
I can already guarantee you he's not going to convince me. So what the hell am I looking at?
Part of the problem with these is, and part of the reason I feel justified in just not even reading the rest of it, is because by the time I withdraw from it, the person has already committed all kinds of logical missteps and fallacies and circular reasoning and everything. They couldn't possibly say anything else that corrects that. But you're right. A lot of these same guys think or would claim just what you're saying, that, well, you know, I'm not emotional when I talk about it. Yeah. Well, you don't have to be emotional when you talk about it, because you can sit there and totally just pull this BS out of the air and not feel threatened by anybody challenging it, because you're in this position of power and authority. So of course you don't get emotional. Mm-hmm. About it. And it's,
and
so
also you
stupid.
Can get not emotional if you're that smug and arrogant
and deluded.
Yeah. But I will say, and this reminds me, so I have to tell about this one. Sometimes it doesn't piss me off and just amuses the hell out of me. And that, I think that frequently ties to whether or not I think the article in question is damaging. And there are some times where it's just so fucking out there and so fucking pointless that I'm like, this isn't going, like, this isn't a symptom of a larger issue. This is one lunatic and nobody's going to listen to him. And my personal favorite was a gentleman who talked about the future evolution of humanity quite seriously. But here's the tip off originally. He was listed his occupation as futurist. So you know that's going to be a great sign.
Yeah.
And he thought humanity was going to, via natural selection, evolve into certain ways. Men were going to evolve to be much taller and more muscular and broad-shouldered. And women were going to evolve to have very slender waists, to have very large breasts, and to be hairless except for long hair on their head, and to have very big eyes, and essentially look like anime women. And I have so much fun going through the list of reasons why that doesn't work, because that's the thing. I have a huge list of reasons that any one of those things blows it out of the water, and I've got all of them. I'm just like, how do you think natural selection works? I'm like, even, okay, here, I want to break it down. And I know we don't need two people, but do it with me because it's fun. Let's take the obvious peak of this, which is you're assuming that the things you've described are what everybody considers attractive. We're starting right there, and that is patently false.
Yeah, right.
There is this idea that, oh, guys love the big boobs. But first of all, that's very culturally specific. And second of all, in that specific culture you're talking about, or cultures, because maybe there's a couple of them, it's also super not universal there either. Like, oh my God, no, that's not true. No.
But the idea that no. only those women are going to have babies.
Exactly. I'm like, that,
the rest won't have sex with anybody or ever have children.
Like, especially,
oh, man.
And it's the exact opposite of the problem, because you know what? In this culture, even the guys who want a woman who looks like that also totally go out and get drunk enough that they will have sex with a woman who looks nothing like that because they can have sex. And sometimes they'll get those women pregnant. So the specific people that actually fall into the demographic that you think is universal are willing to put their genes towards completely opposite. Like it's one of those where even if part of the things you, none of the things you say are true, and even if part of them are true, the other things would make that completely not work. I'm just like, you're just like, we don't. There's not a universal standard for attractiveness. On top of that, attractiveness is never and never will be the sole thing that determines reproduction.
Yep.
And on top of that, even if after we throw away all of this shit, the society's at a point where evolution, like physical evolution of humanity via natural selection, is incredibly limited. Because people can reproduce artificially. I mean, there's so many. At this point, yeah, there's way too much control over whether or not you reproduce. That it's just not, it was just amazing. Like, and it's a real article that got like published by real grown up people.
Well, like, here, I want to make something clear here, though. When I get upset with these things, and I get upset with evolutionary, I mean, I'm getting more and more. I'm thinking evolutionary psychology is this pseudoscience because there's no basis upon which to decide which theory is better or worse.
In anthropology, we always got into what is called sociobiological arguments, and they were incredibly frustrating for this exact same thing.
You can't test them. People are just making this stuff up, and the only strength of it is that if people nod their heads and go, oh, yeah, that sounds reasonable, well, that's not a test.
It's all predicated on a common sense argument. And frequently it's not a good common sense argument anyway. But even if it was, common sense arguments are not scientific.
Well, that's right. And also the assumptions that even bring in justify the need to have the argument are all wrong.
Yeah, the sense is also not that common.
But that's... that's actually not what's making me so upset. And the sexist aspects, those things aren't what's making me stop reading them. It's because I'm just at a point in my life right now, and I hope this isn't for very much longer because it's very frustrating, where I'm just angry about things. Like, I see things happen and I think, why does this have to happen? And then I see these scientists, so-called, that are publishing these things sometimes in journals, like scientific journals, and it's making
real
the news,
yeah.
And people are talking about it, and I don't suspect it's actually making anything worse, because I think really all it's showing is just how bad things already are. But I'm getting to the point where I'm so tired of being reminded how cruel people are to each other, and how much people are suffering under things like the gender binary, and how, you know, I guess I'm starting to become one of those people that, you know, you meet these people sometimes, they say, well, I wouldn't even watch the news or read the news because it just makes me upset.
Sometimes you do meet those people. Sometimes you do a podcast with those people.
Right, you are one of those people.
But I'm the guy who stopped watching The Daily Show because it had too much real stuff in it. Like, there's a way... That's true. She would watch the news, and then she would get mad at me. And now she reads stuff in the morning, and I'm like, don't tell me if it's sad. I don't want to know.
But how?
But that's how you get out of it, and it's a terrible answer. But how you get out of it is you make your world more insular. I don't consume media that I think is going to make me upset. I don't get into arguments with people anymore. I don't associate with people who have other viewpoints that I find offensive. And that's a terrible answer, but it works.
See,
and guess what? As a white male, it's way easier than you might think.
I get it. No, well, I'm sure it is.
Especially in Iowa.
But the problem with that for me is I'm aspiring to make media. So it has to be relevant. Well, it has to respond to
You're aspiring to actually be a positive influence on the world.
That too. Like,
yeah, there's the thing. That's what I'm telling you. This my way works. My way is a terrible way. My way makes you a horrible person.
No, that's not true.
My way makes you a drain on society.
That's not true.
It is, and you know why it is?
Why?
Because over time, as much as I try and remind myself, I forget that I've built this little insular world, and I occasionally get confused and think the outer world is like that. And then I start developing all these weird prejudices and generalizations because I forget that there's a whole big world out there that doesn't look at things the same way I do. And it's a phenomenon I have run into with people who get older. It's not universal, but a lot of people, when they get older, people like my parents who pride themselves on their open-mindedness and to this day still pride themselves on their open-mindedness. But you know what? When you talk to them about specifics, they're not that open-minded. And they used to be. But what happens is over time, your world gets smaller and it's more insular and you start dealing more and more just with the realities of your specific context and hanging out with the people you want to, not the people you have to, because you don't have a job anymore. So you don't have coworkers thrust upon you anymore who may have different viewpoints. And the longer that goes on, the more and more parts of your brain forget that your perspective is no longer what it was. And so what you consider really broad is way smaller than it used to be.
Well, except knowing all of that, I try to expose myself to as many other viewpoints as I can.
Yes, but
which is,
that's why you're doing the exact opposite of what I do, and I'm doing it, and one could say I'm doing it consciously so I can remind myself that's not the case, and that slows the process down, but it still happens, it's still there because it's habit and it's comfortable. Over time, little bits and pieces, I forget about the people who aren't me. I forget about the people who aren't like me. I forget about the problem people. The people who are causing problems that don't impact my direct life, I don't read the news about them. I don't argue about them. I don't associate with them. Over time, I can forget they're there. So kids, don't be like me.
Why?
Well, don't do podcasts.
But if they're not like you, then they're like me and they're really angry all the time at a whole bunch of idiots. Okay. And
I don't know how I'm going to bring this to you, William.
I shouldn't say idiots because I don't think they are idiots.
But there are people out there who are not like either of us.
No, I know that. What I'm saying is that it's very frustrating. And part of it, I suppose, is because, you know, a second ago I said these people were idiots. And I do say that when I'm angry, but I don't really believe it. Because if I did, I wouldn't be bothered. I'd go, well, they're just idiots. Nope. But I don't really think that or else I wouldn't be angry.
And that's
and you want me to believe they're idiots because you don't want me to be angry anymore, but I just can't believe it.
The world is frustrating. The only way to not be frustrated is to either remake the world, which is what you're trying, but that's a long and slow process, or to ignore the world.
Well, here's the secret for me, though.
Green tea.
I do think that there's a state of being or state of doing, I should say, that I imagine where I'd feel like I could feel okay. Like I'm not changing, you know, the world's not changing overnight or I'm not making some big revolutionary change or something, but I feel like I'm doing as much as I can do and I could be okay with that. I think that part of my frustration is that I don't feel like I'm in that place. Like,
have you ever been in that place? Because otherwise, there's theoretically such a place, but we don't know that that place is there. It might be that if you get to that place...
I felt closer to that place than I feel now.
Well, that I buy. But you've been having to deal with a lot of domestic stuff.
True.
And that is largely clearing up, so now you have an opportunity.
Well, but in my mind, this place is very clear. It's not a theory. It's, I think if I got there, I'd go, okay, this is where I wanted to be, and I, you know, again, it's, I'm not, I have no idea even if this will have an impact in the long term, but I know I'm doing the most I can do, so I'm happy with it. Then I think I could feel good about being in that place. But until I get there, I think I'm going to be pretty frustrated. I think once I get there, I'll still be frustrated, of course, because the world is kind of a frustrating place, but I think I'll be less frustrated because I'll feel like, well, I'm doing the best I can do. And I mean, I am doing the best I can do, like with what I have, but I think that something tells me, or I have this conviction of something, that if I could just break through some block that I keep running into, I could actually do better.
Well, you let me know when you get to...
Yeah. Well, you'll probably be the first one to find out.
I'll be sitting in this chair.
That's... I think if I could achieve that, I could feel, like I said, still frustrated, but a lot better than I feel right now.
All right. Well, we're out of time, so what'd you give me for my birthday?
This podcast. I hope you enjoy it.
You cheap bastard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a negative money. It's this podcast has cost me money. So you're giving me like a negative present.
Oh, so I guess this is your present to me for my birthday.
Happy birthday. I got to update my credit card information or else they're going to take this off the internet.
Oh. We wouldn't want that.
We wouldn't.
Lots but of would other you, people
would. Would you, listeners, if you would, tell us about it on the blog while it's still there, themagicaldogginghat.com. Also, write the hat and say, ha-ha, you got kicked off the internet, themagicaldogginghat@gmail.com. Also, I suppose if you wouldn't want us to go away, you could let us know about that as well, if such a unicorn exists. But that's all we have to say for now, so we'll talk to you in 1 week for you, 2 weeks for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the miracle of time.
Pre-recorded.
Recording.
Yeah, podcast.
Stuff.
Yep.
Do you know why ABC Family Channel is called ABC Family Channel?
No.
It's an interesting story. I'm not going to tell you right now.
Okay.
All right. Good night and good luck.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.